Live your life, boy.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Conspiracy Farm, where we don't start the conspiracies, we just add the water. And now, your host of the most state-of-the-art, most informed podcast on the interweb, I present to you Pat Miletich and Jeffrey Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for war?
Yeah, rear naked choke a cocker spaniel, bro. You know what I'm saying? Change the neighborhood up.
Conspiracy Farm. Go. Check it out.
Well, all right. Here we go. We're back. We're back again. Another episode of the Conspiracy Farm for the archives. We've been gone a little while again, but we feel the time is now to jump back on here. And of course, I'm riding shotgun with my homeboy, UFC Hall of Famer, eater of worlds, master of the tango, Pat Miletich. Patrick, what's up, brother?
Just dusting my microphone off, brother.
You know, it's about that time, right? We're living in crazy, crazy, crazy times, and we've been gone for a while. You know, the world's still as crazy as ever. And I was telling Pat, you know, we've talked about it before, man. If you go back to some of the archives, I think particularly, I re-listened to episode one not too long ago. Holy shit, man. I mean, very interesting. Very interesting if you give that a listen. And then I would definitely also suggest the one we did with the late Rosa Quarry, episode 150, just the Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, just all super coming to fruition right now.
And G. Edward Griffin.
I forget which one it was, but it was, I think it was maybe the second one with Diljana Gajtunjeva, because obviously the bio labs have been all the hubbubaloo over the last few years, and she was talking about it clearly even before COVID and genetic-specific bioweapons, etc. So check out the archives, man. We still exist here on that podcast network. Check us out, The Conspiracy Farm, obviously. But it's good to be back, man. It's good to be back.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. We've got a lot of endless material that we can talk about, but there's some really specific stuff that we linchpins to what's going on in the world today, from environmental issues to human issues and everything in between. We've got a lot to cover.
Well, and it's going to be, you know, Pat's been definitely doing his homework on this subject, and kind of what he's going to say, we're all kind of intuitively know this, but you know, over the years on the show, we've done our best to try to not slip ourselves into this binary dialectic of right versus left. All too often, we've spoken about so many of these issues we speak on transcend the politics, transcend the narrative they're trying to give us of, you know, create the group, separate the groups against each other, and divide and control. While in fact, you know, it's a eugenics operation. The eugenicists that really, truly run everything and engineer our society hate all of us and are killing all of us. And we're going to talk about it quite a bit today as it relates to our soil. I know it sounds kind of crazy. You know, hey, I eat clean, I eat organic and all that. But I mean, even then, man, just listening to Pat and having these conversations and what he's going to articulate today, I mean, even obviously organic can still have a certain percentage of bad stuff in it and still be considered organic, and the politicians are trying to widen that gap of what bad can be in it. But the fact that the soil that it's grown in is tainted, ladies and gentlemen, this is why when we talked about on the show before, we're born with, what is it, hundreds of different chemicals and toxic metals in our umbilical cord, and it starts with our soil. And you know, obviously it's everywhere. It's our food, our water, our air, our soil. We need to come to the stark realization, and Pat's going to really lay this out here, that we have been the victims and the target of chemical and biological warfare for decades. For decades. And, you know, all the different problems we have in the world, there's a lot of them, man, but it really starts with our soil. Because our food is getting us sick. And then where do we go when we get sick? We go into the pharmaceutical company to keep us sick. And so Pat's really going to lay this out, man, because this is, as everyone's heard the term, silent weapons for quiet wars. This is, ladies and gentlemen, eugenics 101. And again, it transcends all the different ways that they're dividing us. Champ, take it away, brother.
Yeah, well, we'll just hold a conversation. But, you know, ultimately, it comes down to this. As you well know, you cannot grow food with pharmaceutical products and, well, have people live without side effects, right? So that's really what we've been dealing with for several decades, to say the least, and Americans' health and Canadians, North Americans in general, our health has deteriorated. I've watched it. I'm old enough. Into my 50s, to where, you know, I'm old enough to remember when everybody was walking around with a six pack, abdomen, the obesity was not an issue, that people did not have the health issues, nearly, to the level that we're dealing with now. And so, you know, we are products of our environment just as, plants are, right? So if a plant is sick, we go, well, maybe I need to water it, or, wow, I didn't give it any nutrients, or not enough sun, or it's always the environment with a plant. Well, that's the exact same thing with human beings. You know, the modern allopathic medical world will tell us when they're talking to us during the doctor's visit, any history of heart disease in your family, any history of cancer in your family, telling us that it's genetic. Well, there are some genetics from our standpoint that are involved, and that's basically, well, we're generally living out of the same pantry and refrigerator, so the effects are going to be similar depending on what we're putting in our family's bodies, but also our genetics and how different manifestations of inflammation are going to show up depending on the chemicals in the tap water, for instance. We know that, you know, tap water around the country is in pretty sad condition, with a lot of chemicals, whether it's manufacturing, agriculture, you know, pharmaceutical products that do not get filtered out of your water. They, you know, will make it look clear. They will add some things to it, but those chemicals are still there, unfortunately. And so, you know, that's what we're seeing manifest around us in a lot of the illnesses and hormonal imbalances in children, mental problems, you know, all these types of things. So there's a lot going on from our environment that's getting into us, that's causing, you know, wreaking havoc. And most people have no clue that's even taking place, right?
Well, and something you mentioned, it's very important because, I mean, I think at the root of all of our quote-unquote disease or dis-ease is inflammation, and the inflammation creates the free radicals. And like you said, dependent on our genetic makeup, that inflammation is going to express, or the illness and the disease is going to express itself differently based off of your genetics. So for one, it might be heart disease. For one, it might be high blood pressure. For the other one, it might be some autoimmune or whatever. But at the root of it is this inflammation that is being caused by this toxicity that we are surrounded by.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's correctable, right, for the most part. It really is. And so, you know, when they talk about, you know, for instance, climate change, okay, that's not from the tailpipe of your diesel truck or your car. If there's any man-made, you know, climate issues, well, if we're pounding the soil, for instance, with chemicals for 50 years, which we've done, and we're destroying the organic mass and matter in that soil, well, that soil holds less and less water, for instance, right? So for every 1% of organic matter in an acre of soil, it will hold 20,000 more gallons of water. So, you know, 1 acre garden, I increase that organic matter in that garden by 10%, that's 200,000 gallons of water that 1 acre garden will hold, right? So that's then going to affect evaporation rates, and then eventually, of course, affect precipitation, the downfall of water, back onto regions around the country. So if we've toxified the soil, removed the organic matter, the water is simply just running off. The soil won't, you know, it's clay in many places, where it won't hold water. That's just going to run off into creeks and streams and rivers and away geographically from that area. And we're seeing a big uptick in droughts around the Midwest right now, right, over the past several years. So there's your climate change, right, which is being created through, you know, chemicals, inputs on the soil. And look, I'm not against farmers. I'm actually 100% for farmers. I want farmers, family farmers, to be able to keep their farms. I want them to have great yields. I want them to heal their soil, all of these things. And that's the goal with me being outspoken about this stuff is, look, man, I want you to have great yields. I want you to be able to take care of your children. And I want my children to be healthy as well as yours, you know, and that's really what this comes down to. And all the people that are in the, for instance, the ag industry,
right,
you know, from the executives to the agronomist to the farmer to the employees of the farmers. Everybody's just trying to take care of their children, man.
Well, as you've made your rounds, because you and Dr. Will Spencer and others have been traveling the country, you know, educating people, how much resistance, I mean, because this, you are up against, like you said, the ag industry, which is not a small industry by any stretch. How much resistance have you gotten? And if you have gotten any resistance, that it would seem to me to be silly, because you could still have high yields and all of this stuff, but with all the petrochemicals and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, what kind of resistance have you gotten from this behemoth of an industry?
Well, generally, you know, a farmer might say to me, you know, that sounds interesting. Let's do some tests. And the farmers are super intelligent, number one. They've got to be, you know, they've got to be agronomists. They have to be chemists. They have to be soil experts. They have to be diesel mechanics. They have to be heavy equipment operators. They have to be a lot of things,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They have. I mean, these guys have a wealth of knowledge. They're super super intelligent and super intuitive. And most of them are very open-minded, and they want, of course, they want better yields. And they'd like to spend less money on their inputs and make more money at the end of the day when they harvest. And that's really what this comes down to, is all those things combined. And they want to take care of their children. They want to do what's right for their kids. So, if, you know, I tell people, everything that we all do as parents is out of love for our kids, right? I wouldn't be outspoken. If I didn't have any kids, I'd just have my garden. I'd grow, you know, biodynamic foods, and I'd keep myself healthy. And probably, for the most part, I wouldn't be as outspoken. But because I have children, after I kick the bucket and leave this rock, I guess as a parent, I'm supposed to leave a better place for them, right?
So something like that.
Yeah, so that's why I'm outspoken about this, you know. And so all the people out there in the ag industry, for instance, are doing their best to take care of their children. They want to make sure that they're fed. They want to make sure that they're living a better life than they did, probably, right? We all want that for our kids, and eventually get them off to college and get them off on the right foot before we end up, you know, leaving this rock, as I said. So. But here's the thing: with these programs that we're putting in place, we can, you know, you think about the love that you have for your kids. Well, we can provide for our children a much better world after we're gone by implementing these things, by creating immediate financial security, healing the soil, growing great crops, great yields, nutrient dense food. Doesn't matter if it's corn for cattle or tomatoes for humans. You know, all these things are possible, and that's really what it comes down to. And so I just tell people, you know, look at the beauty of your children and understand that we can provide for our kids right now, as well as, you know, we can give back from the grave, so to speak, right?
Well, and again, I imagine, like oftentimes, like the medical industry and so many different industries, there's no money in the cure, no money in making it right. What you're doing and attempting to implement, doesn't this put a dent into ag industry's pockets as well as the pharmaceutical industries? Because we're eating all their toxic food, excuse me, chemicals that are in all toxifying our food. And then, like I said, we get sick and then we go get the toxic chemicals in the pharmaceutical company. So if we start doing this in the way that you're suggesting, this puts a pretty big dent in this multi-billion dollar industry.
Well, I mean, let's look at it this way. Do we want to talk money, or do we want to talk the future of our children's health? You know, do we want to talk family farm security, or do we want to talk corporation security? You know, that's really what this comes down to. The farmers out there, they are almost, a lot of them have been converted into almost sharecropper status. You know, many of them are struggling, lost. By the stats I saw, more than a couple hundred thousand family farms have gone away in the past few years. We've got real, real severe issues with that. And so those family farmers, those are who I care about. I care about them and their families. I care about my family. The giant corporations that are manufacturing these chemicals, look, we want to work with them as well. We would love to help them make the transition and be able to provide livings for their employees, and we can do that. We know a lot of people from the conventional ag world have been coming over to the side of at least organics, and then above organic, and then, you know, the top shelf. The premier way of growing food is the biodynamic way of growing food, which is what we do. And so a lot of those folks are coming over. Some of the top plant geneticists, scientists, soil scientists, agronomists, like I said, farmers are coming over and realizing that all of this can be done to where the plants can be grown, where they have their own immune systems, they fend for themselves, they don't need pesticides, they don't need fungicides, and if they put cover crops in, which a lot of people will say, yeah, but cover crops lower my bushels per acre. Well, here's the thing is, if through biodynamic agriculture, we can increase your yield that much per acre, that it's not that big a deal. You're still way above, you know, what your yield is now by using our programs, putting the cover crops in, aren't putting a dent in that. Well, yeah, we want to hold soil in place. We want to be able to pull and create more carbon in the soil, which is, you know, those nutrients that are bonded with carbon are what are beneficial for, you know, their crops. And that's ultimately the goal, right? So, you know, we can do all those things with these programs. And so that's really what this comes down to, is doing the right thing and saving the family farmers.
Well, and so what does that consist of? What is the tool? What is the key that unlocks basically revitalizing our soil and making our plants more nutrient dense, thus being more bioavailable to us? What is this? You got the secret, brother.
Well, it comes down to understanding the biological science that the microbes that used to exist in our soil, but we have a blend of over 1,000 unique types of microbes that can live in very inhospitable environments. They work well together, and those are the only microbes on the planet, types of microbes on the planet, that are, you know, have the ability to ingest heavy metals, which have always been, you know, heavy metals have always existed on our planet. But those microbes can ingest heavy metals, synthetic chemicals, and other harmful substances in the soil. And basically what they do in that digestive process is remove the oxygen molecule off of that substance and place a carbon molecule on it, thereby making it go from a heavy metal, for instance, to a colloidal metal, which is beneficial to, say, for instance, in a human being or an animal, then can be burned as fuel in the mitochondria to create cellular energy, proper cellular function, and those nutrients in those forms, in the right amounts, are necessary for genetic expression for plants and animals and humans, insects, everything that thrives on this planet. So zinc, magnesium, you know, all these different types of substances, when they're bonded with carbon, become a colloidal nutrient and can be expressed through, you know, proper genetic expression and create immune function. So a plant doesn't need pesticides, right? It will give off the enzymes that will inhibit bugs from wanting to eat it. And I know a lot of farmers that use this type of program or our program who never use fungicides, pesticides, and they'll put cover crops in and they don't need herbicides, you know? So that's
what was, you had mentioned in the video you recently did, I posted on the Conspiracy Farm X page, Twitter page, whatever you want to call it. The role of, I think it's called mycelium. I think it is. I thought that was pretty heavy, 'cause you said the chemical, or they're removing that, but the mycelium's crucial to getting the toxins out or something like that. What's the role mycelium, I think it's called, plays in all this?
Well, the soil experts will tell you that they have just scratched the surface on even remotely understanding that subterranean world. I mean, you've got the bacterias, you've got the myceliums, then you've got, you know, other microorganisms, which are in neither category, which all work together in unison. You know, so the mycelium, for instance, is the what should be trillions of miles of mycelium network, or I guess a God's fiber optics network that's under the soil normally, before it's tilled up and ripped apart, would basically transport nutrients through that fiber optics network to a part of the field or forest or whatever piece of ground that it's under to an area of the of that soil that needs more nutrients, for instance, right? So the bacterias and the myceliums and the other microorganisms, the archaeas, all work in unison together to basically get this job done. So if a piece of a forest burns down 100 miles away, the mycelium will transport, the signals will say, hey, this part of the forest is damaged, and we need to transport nutrients there to get this repaired as fast as possible. So that's complexity.
That's pretty trippy. Yeah, that's very complex, man. That's pretty trippy.
It's way beyond our comprehension and understanding. Yeah, yeah. You know, we can understand the mechanisms and a lot of how this stuff operates, but we truly do not, you know, electron microscopes can barely pick up a lot of the microorganisms that are super important in converting toxins into beneficial nutrients. And with so much of our soil destroyed, that just increases the toxicity of the soil, you know, especially when the chemicals are being put down on it. So we have less of the colloidal nutrients that we need for health and genetic expression for our immune function. And then you throw onto that the synthetic chemicals that are proven to be damaging to immune function, the heavy metals. And so we're getting double whammied in our environment and in, you know, the animals, the human experience is somewhat not the way it's supposed to be. Let's put it that way.
And so, what is the role of the fulvic humic in not only just human consumption and ability to protect ourselves, but also the plants, putting it in the plants in the soil? What is it about this insanely crucial chemical? Or I think it's a chemical. Yeah, fulvic.
Well, it's got, you know, humates come from numerous sources, whether it's a dead seafloor bed, a coal deposit, peat bogs, you know, all these different types of sources where some are fossilized and the nutrients are now locked up back into rock, technically, I guess, is the best way to put it, where peat bog sources are still alive. The microorganisms from, you know, tens of thousands of years ago are still, you know, thriving and alive and well and in certain sedimentary layers underneath those bogs. But nonetheless, it's all the different levels and time frames of the humification or decomposing plant and animal matter that have created these sediment layers, right? So all those nutrients in that then can be very beneficial for agriculture. And so depending on how that's used, I mean, some people will just spread 150 pounds of coal dust on their farm fields, which obviously is going to be a much slower process of breaking that down than putting peat bog derived humates with the microorganisms that they contain, you know, down on soil. But that's, you know, just one of the components of the overall biodynamic program that we use for gardens to lawns to, I mean, we've got sod farms using our program now instead of chemicals. We've got, you know, a lot of farmers are using it. You know, European farmers do a lot of this using our programs, Eastern Asia, you know, so the practices have always been there. It's just been, right, kind of in pockets, and a lot of people just haven't been exposed to the biological science, the factual stuff that goes on.
Well, like I said, whether it's the medical industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the ag industry, you know, they've been pretty successful as financially doing it their way, and I think that's kind of the miracle of what you're talking about. Not only is this reversing things, you know, in agricultural application, it's good for the human body as well. It reduces inflammation. I mean, it's absolutely incredible the gift that this chemical is. And you kind of been speculating recently, what is the role in kind of the toxification of the lands, if you will, in your speculation that this kind of coincides with Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, and the seizure of certain private lands?
Well, we can call it a coincidence, you know, we can see the damage that's been done through 50 years of agricultural practices, manufacturing, personal care items that have aluminum and parabens and everything else. And then we're seeing, all these things affect the human experience, the biological organism that we are, right? So heavy metals and chemicals do not belong in organic organisms. Let's just go there. But getting back to what you're talking about, Agenda 21, Agenda 30 stuff that we covered, that was signed in what year, 1990, what?
I think it was 96, maybe, 4, 5, 6, something
96
like that.
96 in Rio de Janeiro,
that's
Brazil.
Right. Yep.
So in those documents, there's, pertaining to moving humans off of toxified soil, where there's toxic water, soil that's uninhabitable by human beings. That stuff was clearly stated in those documents, and those were signed by 170 what? How many nations signed those documents? I'm trying to remember.
It was up in that neck. I mean, it was almost 200. I mean, it was a lot. 150 plus, 170 plus, like you just mentioned. It was a lot.
Yeah. So with that being said, all of that stuff was in place already. Documents there for many years, and now we're witnessing biosolids being spread on agriculture soil, compost facilities, county compost facilities. People can check and see where they're getting their, where they're deriving the substances for their compost at the county compost facilities. But we're talking lawn clippings that have had massive amounts of chemicals put on them. Then the human water waste treatment plants, which we know, humans, 70% of Americans are on pharmaceutical products. We've also got the agriculture and lawn care and golf course chemicals that are in that water. And so then that sludge, so to speak, from the water treatment facilities is then combined in a lot of places at these compost facilities with the lawn clippings. And then it's broken down into condensed. So that's condensing the heavy metals and synthetic chemicals in those substances. And then the EPA approved the spreading of that biosludge on agriculture, on farms, and now then the EPA is now going back and, going after those farmers and condemning land. So we've got some big problems, and there's other sources of contaminants, of course, and so, farmers are, they put government funding in place, lo and behold, to buy the land from the farmers and move people off of this toxic land. So
into the smart cities.
Well, yeah, wherever they're ending up, right? Wherever they're ending up. And so this is something that people need. We need to see the simplicity of their plan.
Right.
And understand that, the Hegelian dialectic of causing a problem, and then, the reaction from the citizens, which we're seeing the media now exploding with all the biosolids and the PFAS, the plastics, all the panic that's being created amongst the citizens about these toxins. And then, lo and behold, there's government money to buy your land and move you wherever they're going to decide to move you. Well, there's a solution to all of this because the microorganisms that are in our program and other people's programs ingest all of these toxins and convert them to, again, beneficial essential fatty acids that are good for plants and everything else on this planet. So there is a solution to all of it. It's just a matter of, making sure that the folks, and there's a lot, I've met a lot of people, man. I've got friends in the EPA, friends in the USDA, friends in that work in all these organizations, these departments, who are really, really good people. I just fear that a lot of them don't know the science.
Compartmentalization, like we've always talked about, compartmentalization. That's
right.
Usually how it works.
And,
need to know basis.
I've had conversations with agronomists and horticulturalists, for instance, and they'll look at me and go, I had a lady, she goes, are you a horticulturalist? I said, no, I got punched in the head for a living. she goes, how do you know all this stuff? And I said, well, I read, I do research and I hang out with really, really smart people. And so, you know, that's really what it comes down to, is that just broadening your horizon, that once you get a PhD or a degree of any sort, you're not done learning.
Right.
Super important, you know, and that's the mentality that I took into, for instance, mixed martial arts, is I was a good wrestler, but I wasn't the best in the world by any means. So I didn't depend on my wrestling only to win a world title. I had to put together a lot of knowledge from a lot of different sources, because I knew that I needed that well-balanced, education and understanding of all the different ways of combat to be able to win a world title and I guess eventually outsmart or find holes in other people's games. And that's the mentality that I've taken into my education in terms of human health to soil health to, you know, bees, honeybees. You know, it's really the same elements, those 90 really important essential elements in the right form that are going to create an amazing crop with an immune system, to keeping honeybees healthy, to keeping humans healthy. It's really the same formula.
Mm. Well, there is a lot of work to do. And like you said, it's very heartening to hear that a lot of these things can be reversed. But like I said, some of these industries are so entrenched and so caked up and just, you know, been running things for so long. It seems like there's more interest in them keeping us sick and keeping this train going. But an article that we've been talking about, I got hip to not too long ago from my good friend here, State Senator Nick Schroer here in Missouri. And I had no idea about this. And this could be target one for you guys' programs as far as reversing the contamination. This is an article here, and I'm going to put the link to this in the description of this episode here. This is from the Missouri Independent from October 25th, 2023. Weldon Spring uranium plant contaminated Missouri lakes with radioactive waste. Lakes and streams in August A. Bush Memorial Conservation Area were contaminated with uranium from refining efforts in Weldon Springs. And I know the last thing you want to do is be read to, but this link will be put in the description here, but I wanted to just read this little chunk here. Decades of contamination. St. Louis played a pivotal role in supplying uranium for the Manhattan Project, the name given to the efforts to develop the first atomic bomb during World War II. Uranium processed by workers at the Millencroft Chemical Works in downtown St. Louis was used in the first sustained nuclear chain reaction in Chicago.
Wait a minute. Hold on. They were processing uranium in downtown St. Louis?
Yes. For decades after the war, radioactive waste from the project was improperly transported and stores, causing contamination that remains in St. Louis and St. Charles counties today. This has been going on since World War II, and it's been contaminating these lakes. I have a friend whose parent died. You read this article, this guy's best friend, they used to go swimming in this stuff all the time. He was 50 years old, died within a very short period of time, and people have just been sick. Kids are getting these early cancers around these areas because this area has been contaminated with this uranium nuclear waste since freaking the end of World War II from the Manhattan Project. So when you start talking about eugenics again, once again, ladies and gentlemen, this is next level stuff. They don't care about any of us. And this is something that could be potentially cleaned up by what Pat's talking about. But like, again, I'm these psychopaths who are running everything. I don't know. I'm not saying they get off on the death, but it doesn't seem to affect them that much. But that could be target one for some of the cleanup that can be done.
Yeah, I mean, even we've been doing some cleanup at an Indian reservation with some uranium that's in soil there. And so, yes, even uranium can be ingested. Oil spills ingested with these microbes converted to essential fatty acids and rendered, you know, harmless.
The recent Palatine crash, how would that have been something you guys could have?
We did not work on that particular situation.
I'm just saying, could this, your remedies could have affected or helped what happened there with that kind of chemical?
Sure. Yeah, 100%. And so, you know, that's you know, the technology, I wouldn't call it technology. I would call it biological science knowledge, scientific knowledge in how these microorganisms work and how important they are. They are the linchpin to environmental, human, animal, insect, plant life on this planet. We have no choice but to put those microbes back in the soil, and, you know, not the GMO microbes that have been created, you know, many, many years ago when these microbes were being collected from all over the world, from sulfur vents at the bottom of oceans and mountaintops and jungles and swamps, and cataloged and collected, that some of these obviously were being collected for weaponization. Now, when we look at potentially what's going on in the world of agriculture, creating GMO microbes, what is that program for? We know that genetic modification to plants so that they can survive the spraying of herbicides and, you know, a lot of these chemicals, it's not ending up to be very beneficial for, you know, the animals that are eating them, the you know, for our health. We know that genetic modification is causing some severe complications in the food chain. So, you know, it would behoove us as human beings to understand that if we can go back to those microbes, which proved to be extremely beneficial for the process for soil all the way to human health, we better put them back in, and we better put them back in fast.
Well, again, we've always talked about on this show, man, you can't really change anything. Nothing changes if nothing changes, unless you recognize there's a problem. You can't fix the problem. So what would you suggest with, you know, it seems like, you know, we're a mouse fighting a gorilla with these huge ag industries, pharmaceutical industries. Would you recommend, or would you suggest, the call to action, if you will, for our farmers, no pun intended, or even the farmers in the world? What is your call to action to the public as a way of combating this?
Well, number one, educate yourself. It's super important for your children's future to understand this biological science. It's essential. If you want to talk essential knowledge, this is truly it. We've got a lot of farmers who are doing a lot of growing with the biodynamic programs that we have in place. A lot more farmers are doing tons of testing on sections of their, you know, all the way up to 100, 200, 300 acres at a time, the guys that are doing the testing as well. And, you know, we know what the outcome of that testing is going to be. It's going to be very beneficial, and they're going to switch over as well. And so, you know, for folks out there that have gardens, stop buying stuff out of, you know, the huge stores that, you know, have chemicals in them. You know, people can grow nutrient rich, nutrient dense food that is safe from, you know, I've been doing gardens since I was in sixth grade. I built a garden in my mom's backyard back in those days. And, I wasn't using any chemicals. I was doing everything organic, and, you know, I didn't need any pesticides or anything like that on any of my garden plants, as well as, you know, big time farmers who are growing food grade corn and even GMO corn that don't, you know, they don't need to put pesticides and fungicides and these chemicals in place, because their plants have immune system. Their crops have immune systems, and they're protecting themselves. And so it's all there. It's all proven science. And so that's really what it comes down to, is people can go to, you know, our website, environautics.com, ENVIRONOTICKS, environautics.com. And they can research and do a little bit of research on, you know, the biodynamic way of agriculture, and you know, help their bottom line, you know, grow great yields and heal their soil and not only improve the soil, but, I mean, how much value does your farm increase in when you've got healthy soil and you're creating a lot of carbon credits for yourself eventually when they're putting this financial system in place, right?
The new system. Well, in being the change that we want to see in the world, nothing is promised right now, but we are in the talks. We have, a lack of a better term, kind of an insider, somebody who's working with the RFK Jr. campaign. And if you remember, when RFK Jr. announced his vice presidential pick, Nicole Shanahan, some of the first words out of her mouth were about the condition of our soil. She's done a couple movies, a couple documentaries about it. So we're in talks with the RFK Jr. campaign to get one or both of them, at least on the show that I've been working with, the Rob Carter Show on News Talk STL here in St. Louis, hopefully to get one of them on the show. It'd be awesome to get both. But anyway, that's something we're working on. And we are also in works right now because, again, we got to be the change we want to see. This is a very pivotal time in our world and has been for a very long time. But instead of just talking about it, we're trying to be about it and create solutions. We're trying to create down here in St. Louis, and we want to take this on the road, but we're going to start here in St. Louis with a town hall meeting with myself, Patrick Miletich. We're going to get Dr. Will Spencer. We're going to get State Senator Nick Schroer. And hopefully, fingers crossed, if everything goes well with the interview, we're going to get hopefully one or the other, probably not both, but either RFK Jr. or Nicole Shanahan. Nothing's promised. I'm not trying to build them like they're going to be here. We're in talks to hopefully make that happen. But first, we want to get the radio interview on the Rob Carter Show done and in the can. Like I said, we have Pat has a good friend in the RFK camp. So hopefully that greases the skids to make this happen. So stay tuned on that. Stay tuned on that because I think that'll be really cool. I would love to hear Nicole Shanahan and Patrick here get on the same page as far as the condition of our soil, because I was totally sleeping on it. I know it was bad, but I didn't know it was that bad. Because I'm thinking like, well, I eat organic, but it's just like you're almost pissing in the wind because it starts with the soil. So stay tuned on all of that. And something else that you were really on fire about, and this is another thing that needs to be brought to everyone's attention, and again, call to action to call your senators, your congressmen. What's the deal, Pat? They're voting to put this mRNA in our food. What's going on, man?
Well, I would say this, that I looked into it a little bit, maybe deeper, or thought about down the road. The protections, the reduction in liability for pharmaceutical agriculture companies, a federal judge has already put in place, slashed the amount that they're liable for in half. So that's been addressed in many ways by that federal judge and that ruling. So we have to think about if they're removing liability for pharmaceutical companies and their chemicals that are going into our crops, are they removing liability like they did in, was it 1986 with the Vaccine Protection
Yes.
Act?
Yep, in that, yep.
Okay, so 1986, that was put in place so that they were not held personally, those corporations were not held liable for vaccine damage. Taxpayers now have to cover those lawsuits to the tune of what, $5 trillion?
$5 billion.
So anyway, but if they're going to put these protections in place for these pharmaceutical companies, we know that they have already basically mastered putting vaccines and mRNA technology into plants. Is that really ultimately what this is being put in place for? And Iowa, the Iowa Senate, again, passed it. It's moved on to the House. And I have urged people to reach out to their state senators and representatives and raise holy hell with them to not put these liability protections in place for these corporations, because they're planning on putting some stuff in our food that we do not want. And no matter your stance on vaccinations, whether you're for them or against them, they do not belong in our food, period. So,
well, and the forcible way in which they're doing that, and again, the fact that it's being codified, like you said, back in the 80s, the vaccine companies were protected from legal recourse. The fact that they're now voting or codifying, protecting these companies, I mean, it just lets you know who these psychopaths are, the eugenicists who are running this stuff, who want us all dead. Why would you protect? There's no other company where you can't have legal recourse if their services get you sick or hurt from your services. The fact that they've protected these guys in such a way just kind of lets you, it's really a show of their hand of what they're really about, man.
Right, right. But why would they need protections unless they're going to be causing damage?
Exactly.
Unless they're going to be causing damage. So that's the thing that our politicians need to be made aware of, how health is created, how immune function is created through those microorganisms in the soil that have been decimated. We have if we include golf courses, lawns, everything else, we're looking at 1 billion acres where these chemicals are being put down and the microorganisms have been decimated, so to speak. And those microorganisms that create the forms of nutrients that our bodies absolutely must have to create immune function, they have to be put back in the soil. And that is, the linchpin to This is the biggest, I think, in my mind, this is the biggest national security crisis that we could possibly face.
Well, and like I said in the beginning, man, we have been targets of this chemical and biological warfare for a long time. So, there needs to be some call of action, like Pat was saying. Like, I'm a grandfather now, man. I got a kid. I got a grandkid. Like, I want to leave them something better than what we found it. And it's only going to happen if we can step up. But like Pat was saying, like we said, you got to get educated. You got to figure out what the nature of the threat. And Patrick, what would you recommend as a resource where people can go to further educate themselves on this subject?
Again, they can go to Environautics.com and it's labeled Compost Tea. It's a rectangle that they can click on that is a PDF of a 30-page booklet on biological or biodynamic agriculture and how to grow biodynamic food. And this will explain to you the microorganisms and a lot of the things that go into the science that we use. And once they get through that, they're probably, over a long period of time listening to a lot of very, very intelligent biodynamic agriculture experts, from conventional to organic to biological to, beyond organic and biodynamic, being able to piece all this stuff together over quite a few years of understanding this. It's been, 35 years ago, I healed myself from respiratory issues, which enabled me to kind of, start diving into all the information, but it's been 20 some years of research in food and soil and all of that. So it's not like I just started yesterday on this. And there's a lot to learn, and I learn something new every day. And that's what I encourage everyone to do to protect your children from a future of something you do not want to have happen to your children, to our soil, to our food, and all these things. And I just take people back in a time machine back to the 1970s when the Green Revolution happened, when petroleum-based fertilizers were introduced in mass. Farmers looked at the data and said, oh, my God, these are huge yields. I want to do this, because farmers had been through the Nixon taking us off the gold standard and financial issues. A lot of farms were lost after that, and people were struggling financially. And so, hey, this is the science. This is what we can do. Farmers said, absolutely, let's do this, not really knowing what we were going to be dealing with 50 years later today, right? 2024. And so it's not the farmer's fault. They were just trying to pay their bills. But I can tell you that back in the 70s, a lot of my family members down in southern Iowa, on both sides of the family, who were farmers, were suffering from Parkinson's and a lot of other neurological and respiratory issues back in those days. And that was obviously from the introduction of the chemicals in agriculture. So, we want to be able to minimize the damage to our children's future,
for sure,
future health, and enable them to live lives that they're not terrified of, getting some illness that's going to, wipe them out before their time, so to speak, right?
And like I said, get us sick from our food, and then they wind up jumping into the pharmaceutical world where they have to take a pill for this and then a pill for this because of the side effect for this pill and then the side effect from this. It's a never-ending, it's a spiral, and it's this revolving door of this industry of toxicity. And we have the power to change this. We are not past the point of no return. So I hope everybody, I hope this resonates with people. And honestly, if you don't care, if you're cool with, feeding the beast that exploits us, keep doing what you're doing, man. Get it how you live it. But at the end of the day, it goes beyond us. We have a future to leave to our kids and our grandkids, et cetera. So, yeah, man, this is a big deal. And like I said, stay tuned. Pat and I are back. We're going to be chopping up a little bit more frequently, and stay tuned for hopefully good news on this RFK Jr. Nicole Shanahan conversation on the Rob Carter Show. And then hopefully, fingers crossed from that, we're going to do the town hall down here in St. Louis. But if we can get them on board to discuss this subject as well as other subjects, election integrity, etc. But stay tuned. We'll just say that. Stay tuned. And any other final word for the farmers out here, champ?
Hey, man, again, I care about my fellow Iowans, fellow Americans, care about their health and care about the truth, which we've always tried to bring to our listeners. And that's what we're going to continue to do. And I am not an enemy of these corporations. I would love to work with them. We are working with compost facilities and helping them as well convert their compost into bioavailable, amazing nutrient-rich compost to give to the citizens to aerate their lawns, to put in their gardens, you know, all these different things. And same thing we want to do with big ag corporations and the farmers. We want to work with everybody. So that's what we're doing.
Creating solutions, man, creating solutions. It's one thing to talk about it, but at some point we got to be about it, man, start creating solutions. And before I let you slide, champ, and I want to let everybody know, obviously, I just want everybody to keep Pat, the Miletich family, in your thoughts and prayers. Pat lost his sister Jane recently, and I just want to tell you, champ, you know I love you, and I'm thinking of the Miletich family. Big brother John, miss you, love you, Jane, and you know, Patrick, I love you, brother.
Love you too, buddy. I appreciate that.
All right. So until next time, ladies and gentlemen, peace and so much love. Stay tuned. You know there will always be more.